Another quite common set of mental health issues in adolescence is eating disorders like anorexia nervosa. One of the now proven treatments for anorexia nervosa is so-called family therapy. And one of the authorities in this area is James Locke of Stanford University in California.
Family treatment for eating disorders has been a part of possible interventions for 60, 80 years on a theoretical basis, that there's something about these family structures and how they behave that helped maintain eating disorder behaviors. And there were very few systematic studies of these treatments. They're mostly directed at adolescents because anorexia onsets during adolescence.
In fact, there was a whole industry till relatively recently with not a shred of evidence, just people's belief that it worked.
Well, I often say that that is still mostly the case for most of the things we do in mental health generally, and for eating disorders specifically, there is an incredible paucity of evidence for treatments. And one of the things that so upsets parents and families is that when they realize that, they go, wait a minute, what? How could we know so little about an illness like anorexia, which is so severe and potentially lethal? So for a long time, treatments for anorexia nervosa were seen as being almost hopeless in a way because they were treating people so far out in the illness that the chances of response were comparatively low. Families, by that time, 5 to 7, 8 years out,
they got fairly entrenched in their behaviors.
Everything had really got more fixed.
Lots of anger, lots of rejection.
Right, so then families were viewed really negatively. They didn't feel that they were going to be effective. When the work at the Maudsley Hospital began to build on some of the observations of that families maybe could be helpful.
You've done some work, a lot of work in this, and this is known as a major center for it. What's known now about the role of the family in the inception or maintenance of anorexia nervosa?
What's known is the family has no known specific etiologic contribution to the disorder.
So they make no difference to whether you get it or not. What about helping people through it or making it worse?
Well, we do know that patients who have been ill, that are adolescents, that have been ill less than about 3 years, families can be really helpful and superior to other kinds of interventions in promoting their recovery.
And what do we know works? Because you've recently been comparing some different forms of family therapy.
So we've compared family therapy to individual therapy, and we've compared it to systemic family work.
What does that mean?
Systemic family work is where you're working on the family process in a general way, as opposed to in family-based treatment, which is a more focused and behaviorally targeted kind of treatment that's looking particularly at the things the family can do to change maintaining behaviors of anorexia. Whereas in systemic work, you're looking at the overall general processes, the failure to resolve issues, the avoidance of issues, conflicts in the family, and so forth in a general way, rather than focusing on the anorexia per se. And the anorexia is seen in that therapy as targeted indirectly.
And what happens in family therapy?
Helping them learn what it is they can do to challenge the self-starvation, over-exercise, and other maintaining behaviors that their child is manifesting as a part of anorexia nervosa. So families, understandably, don't automatically know how to do this.
Give me some examples of the sort of behaviors that they see in their child and what they can do about them.
Well, the first thing they see is kids not eating. Are they skipping meals? Are they refusing to eat? This is such a confusing and frightening illness. Parents actually need the expert in the eating disorder to help reassure them that their often very right-minded ideas will work if they actually persistently do them.
So really practical stuff.
For many years, we've been doing things in hospital, right? People go to the hospital, they gain weight, and then they get discharged and they lose weight. It's because on the outside, there's no maintaining structure. So we wanted people to achieve normal weight and normal thinking around eating.
Pretty high bar.
Very high bar. So about 50% achieve that over time in family-based treatment, and so about 20% in individual therapy. It reduces the use of hospitalization, which is very high cost. The alternative is going to be a very expensive chain of hospitalizations.
So you've been to Australia and had a look around, so you know the country quite well. How would you rate what we are doing in Australia and the services that are available?
It's funny to be like a Martian in Australia. You know, in Sydney, at Westmead Children's Hospital, they were one of the earliest adopters of family-based treatment. In Melbourne, they've documented huge reductions in the use of hospitalization, recidivism, and so forth. once they've introduced it. When you start going out to Adelaide or Perth, which have programs as well, they are trying to figure out a statewide approach. Because of the great range between places, they're going to have some special challenges. You've got tremendous resources there that have been developed and sustained for a family-based treatment. You've got a range of developmental trajectories happening in different states. And I think that's true here in the United States as well, by the way. It's not unique to Australia. But in many ways, because it's a big country with a small population comparatively, to me, it's poised to be quite successful in being able to implement FBT at a national level ultimately.
What did you find when you compared the different forms of treatment in terms of relapse rates? What does that look like?
If people are recovered, they don't relapse very much. In the study that we did comparing individual and family therapy, a paper was just published on this, the relapse from recovery was, I think, one or two patients. For both treatments, it was very low. So once you recover, and if you're an adolescent who has been treated early in their course, and you meet that high bar we talked about, your relapse rate's low.
You've crossed the divide.
Lots of problems can emerge in life, right? So you can still have anxiety problems, you can still have depression problems, but anorexia is not there.
And therefore it's wrong to talk about a relapse before then, because it's just the to-ing and fro-ing of the condition until you actually get better from it.
That's right.
And the career with eating disorders, if 3 or 4 years down the track you're not better, the 50% who don't seem to get better?
We don't know. You see some weight restoration in some of them. In other words, you see improvement on the medical side, but the psychological improvements are less clear. We did see some real recovery and some people that weren't recovered at the end of the treatment, but it wasn't a huge amount. So not having recovered by the end of a year or so post-treatment, that's not a good sign.
James Locke is Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at Stanford University in California. Next week on the Health Report, a special feature, a long conversation with Norman Doidge, the popular psychiatrist and writer. See you then.